This is VOA News. I'm Lori London. President Donald Trump is announcing his plans to deny asylum to migrants who try to enter the U.S. between ports of entry, a legally questionable move that's part of his election season barrage aimed at caravans heading toward the border. Vice President Mike Pence spoke at a campaign event for Georgia's Republican gubernatorial nominee Brian Kemp on Thursday. He says Abrams, Kemp's opponent, doesn't share President Trump's commitment to border security.
She actually said that the blue wave that's supposed to be coming to Georgia includes those who are, and I quote, documented and undocumented. Well, let me tell you something. If that's the blue wave coming, it's going to hit a red, white, and blue wall right here in the state of Georgia.
Trump is sending as many as 15,000 U.S. troops to the Mexican border to stop the caravan of Central Americans, which is still in Mexico. It's not expected to reach the U.S.-Mexico border for several weeks. The U.S. Justice Department on Thursday unveiled an indictment against two companies based in China and Taiwan and three individuals, saying they conspired to steal trade secrets from a U.S. semiconductor company's research and development of memory storage devices. The charges mark the fourth case brought by the Justice Department since September as part of a broader crackdown against alleged Chinese espionage on U.S. companies. And U.S. stocks rose for a third straight day Thursday as President Trump said trade talks with China were moving along nicely, reviving hopes that the two countries can solve their trade dispute. Adding to optimism, the latest round of results from companies were mostly upbeat. This is VOA. Funerals for the victims continue as the man accused of killing 11 people at a Pittsburgh synagogue pleaded not guilty Thursday in a U.S. federal court on 44 charges that include murder and hate crimes. 46-year-old Robert Bauer spoke little during the brief court appearance. AP correspondent Mary Claire Dale reports.
The suspect, Robert Bowers, has pleaded not guilty to the 44-count indictment that charges him with hate crimes, including murdering 11 people. Bowers walked into court today, which was in contrast to how he was on Monday when he was brought in a wheelchair. He was told that the trial could last 3 or 4 weeks unless it's certified as a possible death sentence case. In that case, the trial would be longer.
A grand jury indicted Bowers Wednesday in connection with the attack at the Tree of Life Synagogue. Hundreds of Google employees from around the world walked out of the office Thursday in a one-day protest of unequal treatment of minority and female workers. AP correspondent Warren Levinson reports.
There were Google walkouts in Tokyo, Singapore, and London. Hundreds streamed out of the New York office and rallied in a nearby park. Nicole Durbin, a Google contractor, says it's time the company lived up to its promises.
I want Google to enforce the provisions that they already have and to take seriously claims of people who are harassed.
The protest was sparked by a New York Times report that Android creator Andy Rubin walked away with a $90 million severance package in 2014 after credible allegations of sexual abuse. Rubin denies the charge. Warren Levinson, New York.
Investigators searching for more remnants of a downed Indonesia flight say they have made progress with the discovery of at least one data recorder. AP Stephen Wright has more.
That's also a crucial part of the investigation. They're also still searching for an object they believe to be a large part of the fuselage. And that can also, of course, provide information and clues about what happened to the flight and why.
Monday's crash is another black mark on Indonesia's fast-growing aviation sector, which has acquired a reputation for poor safety oversight. The country's airlines have previously been banned from operating in the United States and the European Union. China is exporting its methods of strict internet controls to governments around the world that are employing them to stifle dissent and information and tighten their grip on power, according to U.S.-based Freedom House's annual report issued Wednesday. The rights watchdog group says global internet freedom had declined for the eighth consecutive year in 2018. Beijing, it says, has held sessions on managing online content in 36 of 65 countries. I'm Lori London, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbote in Washington. Today is Friday, November 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroon separatist leaders appear in court yesterday, their first since being abducted in Nigeria a year ago.
That they were in court today doesn't make us feel any good. They should not be in court today. They're being in detention in custody in the first place is illegal.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed independent Ambazonia. Malawian civil society and opposition groups want independent forensic auditors to ensure that next year's elections are transparent. Illegal financial flows have cost Uganda billions of dollars in recent years, and Zimbabwe says it has discovered oil deposits.
The government of Zimbabwe has, over the last few months, worked with Victus Energy Limited to undertake oil and gas exploration studies. We have since been advised that the findings are positive.
That's President Emmerson Mnangagwa of Zimbabwe, and the number of suspected and confirmed Ebola patients was at full capacity this week in the eastern city of Beni. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Cameroon separatist leaders appeared in court yesterday in Yaoundé, their first since being abducted a year ago in Nigeria. Seseku Ayuk Tabe was arrested along with 46 others in Nigeria in October last year and extradited to Cameroon in January this year. He had just declared Cameroon's English-speaking southwest and northwestern regions the independent Ambazonia to protest against years of what the group called marginalization by French Cameroon. The Cameroon government has called the separatist terrorist. Chris Anu, Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement. He says Seseku Tabe and others should be released immediately because they should never have been arrested in the first place.
We have not heard anything that took place in court other than that they were in court for the first time since they were abducted in Nigeria and then also illegally transferred to Cameroon. They should not be in court today. They should be free people because you arrest somebody or abduct somebody and hold that person for the period that they have been held without trial, without any accusations. There is something wrong with that. So that they were in court today doesn't make us feel any good. We think they ought to have been out of there by now.
At the same time, shouldn't there be some jubilation on your part because there was concern from you and the others that because you haven't seen your leaders, that maybe the Cameroonian government did something to them. The fact that all of them show up in court, that should bring some relief.
Well, they should not be in court in the first place. That they show up alive in court should not make us excited for any reason because, again, had not committed any crime for which to be killed. So to have shown up in court alive is the right thing. But the illegal thing is they're being in detention in custody in the first place is illegal.
As you know, the Cameroon government said they are all terrorists. You know, if you take up arms against a sovereign nation, that's what they are saying. They took up arms against an independent sovereign nation like Cameroon, so they are considered terrorists.
What are the charges? What are the accusations against them? It is not enough to say they are terrorists. Let the regime of Paul Biya tell us exactly what their crime is before labeling them terrorists. How do you abduct terrorists and hold them for almost 9 months and you don't try them? So we do not believe a word that comes out from the mouth of French Cameroon leaders because they have contempt to the truth.
The lawyer for your leader, Ayuk Tabe, and the 9 others said that the court should dismiss the charges against them. What are the prospects? Do you expect this will happen?
Well, they have no choice but to dismiss the case again because you do not hold somebody incommunicado for close to 9 months and there is no charge against that person. It means that person is not supposed to be there in the first place. So it will not be some concessions to us for them to release them or let them go now. No, They ought not to be there. They ought to be having their liberty, their freedom, like every other person else.
As you know, President Paul Biya just won re-election recently. Could it be, and this is just speculation on my part, that he could release your leaders just to appease other people who supported him from the English-speaking region, hoping that that might get you to drop your agitation against the sovereign Cameroon?
In the first place, Mr. Biya is not the president of Ambazonians. Whether he won elections in French Cameroon or not, he is not our president. He is holding our people in custody illegally. And so whoever he wants to please by maybe releasing them after his inauguration has absolutely nothing to do with our quest for the total freedom of Ambazonia. Our leaders do not have anything in common with the system in Cameroon that you, for which he wants to please his collaborators. Absolutely not. Releasing him does not change our appeal, our fight for the freedom of our people in our country.
Chris, thank you very much again. We are always happy to have you on Daybreak Africa.
My pleasure, sir. Thank you.
Chris Anu is Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. Malawian civil society and opposition groups say they want an independent team of forensic auditors to ensure that next year's general elections are transparent. This after some stakeholders said they have lost confidence in the Electoral Commission's ability to administer transparent and credible polls after they accused the commission of failing to alert them when some of the electoral body's equipment went missing. Steve Duva, executive director of the Malawi Electoral Support Network, tells viewers Peter Clotty that the commission can only regain the trust of the Malawian people by recruiting independent information technology experts.
We want to register here that there is a high level of discontent among the people regarding the way the Electoral Management Body has conducted itself recently. I want to emphasize that those calls are coming because of an incident that happened some few weeks ago regarding the missing but found biometric registration kit. And the bone of contention was that the Electoral Commission did not inform the electoral stakeholders. Stakeholders just learned it from the media. So the question is, this kit is linked to the biometric voter registration system, and therefore people have created so many stories, among which suggest that possibly the data that has already been stored in this in that machine could have been tampered, and maybe new voters could be found on the voters' roll who were not captured at that time.
We've also heard reports that Madam Jane Ansah, the judge who is the chairperson of the Electoral Commission, is being urged by some people in Malawi to step down as a result of some of these controversies that have arisen. Is this the stance of your organization?
It's not our stance of the organization. Our view is that I think this matter needs to be thoroughly investigated. Of course, we are not belittling the cause, but at the same time, we need to understand the process itself, that we have come a long way. And I think this Electoral Commission has done some good things and we have made some good progress. And we are not far away from the election day itself. So I think changing leadership at this point in time on an issue which we can amicably resolve, I think is something which we think should not be encouraged at this point in time. But at the same time, we need to have the matter thoroughly investigated. I think the bone of contention among the people is whether the data has been tampered with. The Electoral Commission brought their experts, the ICT, to explain, but I think not many people were satisfied. So the only way to deal with this issue, and which we support as an organization, is that I think we need to have that team of experts agreed among the stakeholders to do that kind of investigation and report to the nation what happened.
Have you identified any local or foreign forensic auditors that will be acceptable to all, including the Electoral Commission, as part of this transparency process that you seek?
No, that has not been done, and I think that's why people are calling for that, because right now, against what people are actually complaining about, the Electoral Commission has merely relied on using its own internal ICT team to explain what happened, but people are not satisfied. So we have proposed that we need to have a meeting, the electoral management body and the political parties under the Center for Multi-Party Democracy, and also maybe with the civil society organizations like the Public Affairs Committee and the Malawi Electoral Support Network to sit down and look at how we can actually constitute that team of experts.
Steve Duva is the executive director of the Malawi Electoral Support Network. He spoke with U.S. Peter Clotte from the capital, Lilongwe. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, November 2nd. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa says an Australian company has discovered oil deposits on Zimbabwe's border with Mozambique. But as Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, economists say it is far too early to pop the champagne bottles.
President Emmerson Mnangagwa called an emergency press briefing late Thursday, saying he had important news for Zimbabwe.
The government of Zimbabwe has, over the last few months, worked with Victus Energy Limited to undertake oil and gas exploration studies. Victus is utilizing data which was generated by Mobil Oil in the early 1990s, when extensive oil and gas geophysical work was undertaken in the greater Muzaraban area. We have since been advised by Victus that the findings are positive and they point to oil and gas deposits.
Invictus Energy is based in Perth, Australia. On its website, it describes itself as an independent oil and gas exploration company focused on high-impact energy resources in sub-Saharan Africa. Zimbabwe's Energy Minister Winston Chitando says the oil and gas deposits are in a 200 square kilometer area and are Africa's largest oil reserves discovered to date. He said with proper funding, drilling and exploration will start mid-2020. The news comes at a time when Zimbabwe is facing shortages of fuel, among other essentials. Independent economist John Robertson says the news of the discovery is not something to celebrate just yet.
The drilling can take some years because they go very deep. They haven't got the equipment there yet. It would be dangerous to believe claims because the claims could easily be to simply raise money. It's a very difficult area, a difficult part of the world to work in. They need a lot of money to get drilling rigs into that area. And they would therefore need to raise a lot of money. Now, the people from whom they raise that money, I think, are the ones who need to be cautious. It's easy to promise that there will be good results, but it's sometimes very difficult to generate good results.
Invictus Energy officials at Mnangagwa's press briefing did not address the media. The president said the company would give an update to its shareholders on Friday. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
Uganda has lost billions of dollars in recent years from illegal financial flows, including tax evasion, crime, and corruption. Uganda's Financial Intelligence Authority, set up to track illicit money, says it lacks resources to stem the flow. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
Tax evasion, money laundering and related corruption are costing Uganda at least $1 billion a year, according to Global Financial Integrity. The Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit said in a September report that tax evasion from imports and exports alone cost Uganda $6.7 billion from 2006 to 2015. Nearly $3 billion more was lost to errors and omissions in balance of payments over the last decade. Global Financial Integrity says the economic losses were worsened by Uganda's role as a haven for illegal funds from its war-torn neighbors such as South Sudan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Somalia, and Kenya. Ezra Munyambonera is lead researcher at Uganda's Economic Policy Research Center and helped write the report. He blames Uganda's under-regulated financial system.
whether you have got money from selling human beings, even buying goods and services. So that's one way we had the war, ADF war. It was in the DRC. But how was the money getting out? The same thing with Sudan. Sudan people come here with dollars. They have come in high profile. But nobody will ask them, where is the source of this money?
The Economic Policy Research Center's Paul Lokuma, who also contributed to the report, is more blunt. He says leaders in Uganda ignore the illegal money.
Our political leaders, do they have the will of fighting it, or they are benefiting from it? Maybe it serves their political interests, like maybe stability or the length in which they stay in power. So they will look the other way.
Uganda's Financial Intelligence Authority is mandated to check illegal financial flows in the country. Its director, Sydney Asubo, says a lack of collaboration and coordination between government departments has hindered efforts to stop the flow. He says the agency's resources and authority are also limited.
If we know people evading tax, if it's to do with gold smuggling or cash smuggling, we inform the relevant bodies. If it's to do with terrorism financing, we inform the counter-terrorism police. So it's not because the officer doesn't know what to do, but the main challenge we have is funding.
Despite the billions in lost revenue, Global Financial Integrity notes Uganda has made progress against money laundering and cutting off some terrorist financing. Uganda passed a 2013 Anti-Money Laundering Act, which requires disclosure of transactions of $26,500 or more. But corruption and enforcement are still a problem, says the Uganda Financial Intelligence Authority's Asubo. Since starting its operation against illegal money in 2015, Asubo says they have had only two court convictions. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
The number of suspected and confirmed Ebola patients at the treatment center in Benin, the Democratic Republic of Congo, was still at full capacity this week. Nicholas Mule, emergency response coordinator for the health NGO Alemia, says this spike is worrying to responders. He spoke to Ricky Stryak about the efforts to stem the outbreak.
We are currently at 1 bed. Since 2 days now, since 7 days, for suspected and confirmed cases in the Ebola treatment center in Benin, because Benin is the epicenter of the outbreak, which is affecting the North Kivu and Ituri province. In recent weeks, we saw a worrying spike of the number of reported Ebola cases, indeed. And then this combined with the deteriorating security situation, we had to quickly scale up the capacity in the hospital from 18 to 61 beds. But now we reached our maximum capacity. We were seeing around 4 or 5 confirmed patients per week, and now we are up to 16 per week.
Are there any ideas what is causing this increase in cases recently?
Yeah, sure. I think the response to the outbreak is improving every day. And thanks to this, we have a better contact tracing and surveillance in all the town in Benin. So it means that we receive more alerts every day and more cases at the Ebola Treatment Center.
It's not that there are more cases, it's that you're more aware of the cases that are happening.
All the partners and Alima are increasing the contact tracing within the community, the sensibilization as well. So we see less resistance among the population, and they are more willing to come for treatment. So for any alert suspected cases, they come to the Ebola treatment center. We still have some problems with the patient because they come too late at the treatment center, and many of them die before 24 hours of admission. So we still need to work on this, to work on the sensibilization, to make them come earlier, and to be able to treat them.
The UN Security Council this week said they have great concern about the potential for the virus to spread into neighboring countries. Why do you think this calls for alarm now about its spreading as far as Burundi and South Sudan?
I'm not an epidemiologist, but it's a bit difficult to say, but I think that we're working on health promotion and with the other partners as well to control the outbreak. So if Alima is focusing on treating the patients, all the community sensibilization It is very important to maintain this surveillance because in Beni, Butembo, there is a lot of cross-border movement.
That was Nicolas Moule, Emergency Response Coordinator for the health NGO Alima's Ebola Response. You're speaking to Ricky Stryak from Beni in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Minutes past the hour, time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the 2018 CAF Champions League final, as Egyptian giants Al Ahly are dreaming of extending their unprecedented record with a 9th CAF Champions League title as they prepare to take on North African rivals Esperance of Tunisia in the much-anticipated final. Both sides clash at the Alexandria-based Burj Al Arab Stadium later tonight before locking horns again in the decisive return leg at the Radis Olympic Stadium just outside the Tunisian capital, Tunis, 7 days later. I spoke with some sport journalists who all appeared to give the Egyptian side Al Ahly an edge.
If you go by the form that they displayed in the semifinals, I'm going to give the first leg to Al Ahly. They were composed, they showed dominance, and of course they kept eyes on the prize. They knew what they wanted. Premier de Augusto pushed Esperance to the edge in the semifinals. So, for the first leg, I'll give it to Al Ahly.
Looking at the head-to-head performance as well, Al Ahly seems to have the edge. And somehow, I just think Al Ahly may just have the tip.
Al Ahly are more of a better customer when it comes to the CAF Champions League, though they have a little striker crisis.
Staying with football news, the 2018 Beach Soccer African Cup of Nations will take place in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, from December the 9th to December the 14th, 2018. In Group A, host Egypt will square out alongside Morocco, Ivory Coast and Madagascar, while Group B include the 2008, 2011, 2013 and 2016 African Beach Soccer Cup of Nations winners Senegal, Nigeria, Libya and Tanzania. The winner and runner-up will automatically qualify to represent Africa at the 2019 African Beach Soccer World Cup. Sports journalist Enito Obadina, Shegu Oduayo and Austin Okonakman reflects on the draws.
Group B should be the looking glass when it comes to the ability to predict which team will shine best at the CAF Beach Soccer Africa, with Nigeria and Senegal and also Libya, and all looking good for Beach Soccer Africa.
But it's going to be a new leaf for Tanzania. This will be the first time they will be participating at this level. Perhaps they may be kicked out in the early stages, or they might just be shocking the whole world and going as far as the finals.
I love the fact that Egypt and Morocco will get to play themselves, and of course Ivory Coast. Those are formidable sides. I expect the North Africans to do their thing, but keep your eyes closed to Senegal.
In athletics news, two-time London Marathon champion Mary Kitiani will be seeking to clinch the New York City Marathon for the fourth time on Sunday. Kitiani was crowned winner in 2014, 2015 and 2016. But 2018 London Marathon champion Vivian Cheruiyot will also be seeking to stamp authority in New York after denying Kitiani victory in the London Marathon in April this year. Both athletes have got their eyes on winning the race. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that is it for this Friday, November 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very good weekend.
She said she too young, don't want no man.
Starting Monday, November 5th, tune into Border Crossings to win a free copy of Now 68, featuring top songs from a variety of artists. This CD features Calvin Harris's One Kiss, along with Ariana Grande's God Is a Woman, and many other hit songs. Tune in to Border Crossings to win.
Hello, friends. This is Sunday Shomari, host of Let's Talk. Join me Monday for another exciting edition of your show. Our topic will be cooking. Is it a woman's job only? This will be Monday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.